Welcome. Good news is that Mercury is moving into direct motion. So Mercury has been in retrograde or backward motion since I think the 27th of May, about 3 weeks' time, and Mercury will move forward on Thursday, 19th of June, into direct motion. So that means some of the problems created by the retrograde Mercury in terms of communication, travel, computers, machines, those kinds of things. Some of those minor irritants should be lifted. So that's one good thing. Then tomorrow is the full moon. It starts out and Scorpio moves itself into Sagittarius. Tomorrow night would be officially the full moon. If you like to fast and perform some prayer, penance, austerity, do a vrata, a vow. Full moon day, one of the best for that. And Saturday, the 21st, Mars moves out of Cancer. Mars has been debilitated in Cancer. It's his weakest place. And he moves forward into Leo. Better, but Saturn happens to be in Leo. K2 was in Cancer over here. Saturn's in Leo over here. Mars was there. Now he's moving over here. So he's in bad company here, and he's moving with bad company there. So we'll have to see what happens. I'm going to read you an article I just finished. We put it up on the website. It's not very long. But before I do that, interestingly, they legalized gay marriage in the state of California. They sort of circumvented the Constitution, or they interpreted it in a certain way, and they legalized gay marriage. And and that's for anybody, not just California residents. If you live in any of the states, you can go into California and you will be married. They will marry you. So they chose yesterday at 5:01 p.m. California time to make it official. So there, if you can well imagine the queues that of people lined up waiting to marry and to be among the first to have a legalized marriage. But I found it to be, you know, I wish them all well, and I wish them happiness. Hey, Antonio, how are you? It's good. But, you know, at the very least, it's a very gray area and a questionable area in a lot of people's minds. But yesterday was debilitated moon. So it's the moon at its weakest, which is, of course, one of the worst days that you would ever pick for marriage.
Be interesting to
do that. If you told me that you want to get married on such and such a date, and I look and I see moon in Scorpio, which is debilitated moon, I say, this is how I would say it to you. Whatever you do, do not get married on that day. That's what I would say. I don't care if you're marrying a hippopotamus. That's what I would tell you. Or even Angelina Jolie. I would say the same. Because the moon is your happiness. And a debilitated moon does not bode well for emotional balance and happiness and fulfillment of desires. So I found that to be rather interesting symbolically Anyway, I wish them all well, but that's an uphill climb. That's the point on that one. Okay, so somebody asked me to prepare this article. It's very short. The Earth in Revolt. The real story behind the Myanmar cyclone and the China earthquake. Visible effect. Recently, we have experienced natural disasters on a scale that boggles the mind. The cyclone in Myanmar on May 3rd killed approximately 22,000 people and left 2 million homeless. The 7.8 magnitude earthquake in China on May 12th left 50,000 dead and 15 million homeless. For the average person, it is difficult to come to terms with such an enormity of destruction. Many people who are searching for answers are having a hard time finding them. April 28th. Let us turn to the heavens and see what insight it may provide. From a Vedic astrological point of view, Mars moved into the sign of Cancer, the sign of his greatest threat and danger, on April 28th. Just 5 days before the cyclone leveled Myanmar. Mars is considered to be debilitated in the sign of Cancer, which only increases his potential to create havoc and destruction in the world. Mars, a planet affiliated with the fire element, is the instigator of natural disasters. Earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, accidents, carnage, injury, and death are Mars's calling cards under this stellar influence. May 3rd. May 3rd. The cyclone in Myanmar killed approximately 22,000 people and left 2 million homeless. May 5th. On May 5th, the destructive firebrand K2, otherwise known as the Dragon's Tail, also joined Mars in the sign of Cancer. These two planets, when associated, have a destructive force which is second to none. Together, they can fan the flames of fury and frenzy down here on Earth. This date is only 2 days after the Myanmar cyclone. But K2's proximity to Mars and Saturn at that time was enough to throw a few flaming arrows into the mix. And thus, we experienced the devastating Myanmar cyclone. May 12th. By the time May 12th rolled around, the moon, the loving heart of our solar system, also unwittingly entered the sign of Cancer, only to find the two schoolyard bullies, Mars and K2, waiting in ambush for her. And this brought us the 7.8 magnitude earthquake in China. June 13th, a month later. A month later, Taliban militants attacked the main prison in southern Afghanistan on June 13th. They exploded a car bomb at the main gate in a multi-pronged assault that freed hundreds of militant prisoners. Officials said that all the prisoners had escaped. Every last one of them. In the U.S., there was extensive flooding in the Midwest and fires were once again consuming Northern California. In fact, the Mississippi is overflowing, flooding, and they expect it to break the levees in Louisiana again. So that's in the next week, they expect that. June 14th, an earthquake of 7.2 magnitude struck northern Japan. June 15th, major flooding in northern China has left millions homeless. Now this is yet another flood. Mars continues to pass through the sign of Cancer until he moved into exact conjunction with the planet K2 on June 15th. This only exacerbated an already precarious situation. June 18th, now this is fairly close to the full moon anyway. On June 18th, the moon will be full and begin the day in Scorpio. So that's a couple days from now, her weakest position. Earthquakes are very common around the full or the new moon. Further problems can be expected. Today's the 17th. So we already had a 7.2 magnitude earthquake in Japan, 3 days ago.
Was that the one on, because Saturday night I was texting you going, I think it's an earthquake, because my whole bed was going to...
Well, this was northern Japan, but I don't know. Yeah, it's heavy aftershocks on that one.
It was scary, because I was like, shit, is no one else feeling this?
Well, sometimes people feel earthquakes. You know, Kalindi is so funny in L.A. She felt in L.A. there's earthquake every day. I mean, every day almost. And you don't feel them, though. But she did. She felt them all. So I don't know. June 21st. Finally, at long last, Mars will exit the sign of Cancer and move forward into Leo. This may provide some temporary relief, but not for long. For the great oppressor, Saturn, is slowly carving a tortuous route and casting his long shadows through the sign of Leo. So Mars changes his gangland affiliation from K2 to Saturn. From the frying pan into the fire. July 10th. On July 10th, Mars will be in exact conjunction with Saturn, and we can expect more danger and difficulty on the world stage. Around this date, fires, eruptions, or explosions look likely. A government, a dictator, or a repressive regime may be toppled. Person in a high position of public trust may be discovered to be corrupt. Unusual. Invisible cause. Our beautiful home, our Earth, is constantly subjected to a continued assault from her inhabitants. Emotionally, she's expected to absorb our anger, frustration, resentment, criticism, blame, and guilt, whether it is aimed at ourselves or others. Our mistreatment of our brothers and sisters has a direct effect on our mother herself, the Earth. How can it not? Well, how much can she take? The Earth, like your average human, can only take so much. And then she must release the pain and various negative energies that she has absorbed over time. She must release the anger, resentment, criticism, and guilt. And this is what is actually taking place on a subtler plane when natural disasters occur. It is, in effect, a karmic correction. Karmic means what goes around comes around. There is no getting away with anything in this world. All actions and negative behaviors will come back to haunt us at some point in time. This is true individually and collectively. This is why such events as the cyclone in Myanmar and the earthquake in China take place. If we want to avoid such death and destruction in future, then we must change the way we treat others. We must evolve from greed and predation toward others to kindness and compassion toward all. Then perhaps we can reduce the occurrence and consequence of such horrific disasters. And to add to that, I would say I was doing some reading at one of the Puranas on the weekend. And when there are natural disasters taking place, even storms, calamities, and many of these things that we're talking about. It is also an opportunity for very powerful demons to take birth. In other words, very powerful souls whose major aim in the world is destruction. They've come here, they've come into the world to wreak havoc. So that also can take place.
Conception now.
It can be the conception, but this is, I'm talking about the birth, coming out of the womb. And
Oh, so another soul could be trying to come in, and then he can come along, or she, the demon.
Yeah, well, the most powerful souls, who are, you know, a demoniac, meaning destructive in nature, or full of greed and prey upon others, or manipulate others. They will take birth during these storms and cataclysms. In other words, it's like a sign or an omen that such a soul would be taking birth, more or less, is what it said.
So if the plant and the planets are affecting nature, where does global warming fit into all of this? I mean, I know it's all interrelation, but, you know,
well,
astrology says that movement of plants has a direct effect on, you know, the elements.
Well, global warming fits in more with Kali Yuga, with the Iron Age.
Right.
We're in the Iron Age in the four ages of the universe. And we've discussed this at various times, that one of the symptoms of the Iron Age, this is the age of quarrel and hypocrisy, is that the weather patterns will become adversely affected, and they'll begin
in
to...
In other words, they'll... it will swing back the other way, or are you saying now it's good time?
Well, I don't know if it'll swing back the other way, and then well, the next stage isn't for another 427,000 years. So, I don't know, you know, maybe it'll go back and forward, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
You know, ultimately, by the end of the Iron Age, things will be very bleak, but that's 400,000 years from now, so... But that's a symptom, exactly, of the age that we live in, is the weather difficulties. Now, when we read from the Mahabharata last time, it was last time or the time before, I don't know. People were interested in what the results were. What kind of, if you did this, what kind of body would you take? If this behavior got you this kind of body, and that behavior got you that kind of body, which we hadn't talked about, but it was here. I just said we hadn't gotten around to it. So with that in mind, because there was some curiosity, the Mahabharata is one of the books of the Vedas. The Mahabharata is like the greater history of India. This refers to a time about 5,000 years ago when Krishna was on the planet. And at that time, Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita, Song of God, to Arjuna. And the Bhagavad Gita is the small part of the Mahabharata. This is the unabridged edition of the Mahabharata. There's four books this size. It's 100,000 verses, Sanskrit poetry. Just his English. So that's sort of how it fits in, and there's a lot of really amazing information in these books. It's the Vedas. So King Yudhishthira was wondering what happens to certain souls when they behave in certain ways, humans. And Brihaspati, who is the chief priest among the gods being the devas, or the beings who live in the heavenly realms. We would call them in Christianity angels or archangels. So he'd be the head priest among that bunch. They'd go to him for counseling. And he said, listen to me as I tell you what the different acts are by doing which the jiva, or the soul, stupefied by folly. This is kind of old English, so I have to sort of get stupefied by folly. In other words, ready to make mistakes, has to take birth in different orders of being, as declared in the Vedas and the Shastras and the sacred histories. So now he begins to talk about the abode of Yama. Yama, we would think of him as the Grim Reaper. But Yama doesn't look like the Grim Reaper at all. He's actually a very beautiful god, you know. And he's just happens, his portfolio is death and karmic retribution. You know, that's his job. And we've talked about the Yamadutas from time to time, which are his henchmen. And have to go pick up souls who weren't on their best behavior. He knows if you've been sleeping. He knows if you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good. So be good, for goodness sake. That's Yama. Yama Raj is coming to town. He's making a list. So that's, you know, that's where it comes from. They think it's Santa Claus, but in those regions, O King, there are places that are filled with every merit and are worthy on account of being the abodes of the devas themselves. So in other words, there's some beautiful places. There are again places in those regions that are worse than those which are inhabited by animals and birds. Indeed, there are places of these kinds in the abode of Yama, which are equal to the abode, the region of Brahma himself in merit. So, very, very beautiful places. So that must mean that if you do really good stuff, you could go to these really good places as well. Creatures bound by their acts endure diverse kinds of misery. I shall, after this, tell you what those acts and dispositions are, in consequence of which a person obtains to an end that is filled with misery and terror. If a saintly person or a highly born, if somebody born into a Brahmin, they're talking about Brahmins, or a good family, or somebody has higher consciousness, having studied the Vedas, becomes stupefied by folly, I like that term, and accepts a gift from somebody that he shouldn't, then he has to take birth as an ass. And he must live as an ass for 15 years. Casting off his asinine form, he has next to take birth as an ox, in which state he has to live for 7 years. And casting off this bovine form, he next takes birth as a rakshasa of the twice-born order. So then he becomes kind of a demon figure, but he's twice-born, so he has some sort of spiritual consciousness. Living as this rakshasa for 3 months, he then retains his status in his next birth of being a Brahmin again. And this is for accepting a gift that he shouldn't accept, whatever that may be. I'm not exactly sure. Well, it might be that. It might be tainted money. This is the land of the brown envelopes, so it might be tainted money or money, ill-begotten gains, something like that, bribes. A Brahmin, by officiating at a sacrifice, I'm not going to read it all. Okay. The foolish disciple who offends his preceptor, his teacher, but this means like a spiritual teacher, yeah, by doing any harm or injury to him, has to undergo three transformations in this world. He has to become a beast of prey, and then an ass. Living in his asinine form, he has to wander for some time in great affliction as that spirit. After that period is finished, he has to take birth as a Brahmin. And that sinful disciple... Okay, so it's very serious, according to Vedic understanding, to fault find or commit offenses at the foot of the guru. And I have seen with my own eyes what happens to people who do that. And I've seen absolutely terrible, terrible things happen to people who commit those kinds of faults. To criticize or fault find somebody whose life is dedicated to helping others and uplifting others and helping them to free their souls from repeated birth and death is very serious business. Because that person is sacrificing himself or herself for this higher goal. And to find fault with them has just amazing consequences. I'm not going to get into it right now, what I've actually witnessed or been close to, but it's a grave offense. That disciple who, even in thought, commits adultery with the wife of his preceptor has, in consequence of his sinful heart, to undergo many fierce shapes in this world. He calls them fierce shapes. First, taking birth in the canine order. He has to live for 3 years, casting off the canine form when death comes. He takes birth as a worm or as vermin. In this form, he has to live for 1 year. Leaving that form, he succeeds in regaining his status as a human being of the twice born order. You know what it means by twice born? We have one birth. We come out of the womb. That's first born. Twice born is when you take spiritual initiation. Equivalent to that, kind of, in Catholicism, is confirmation. Confirmation is where you swear your oath to the faith, and you, in effect, become twice born. And you need a God mother or God father, who's supposed to be like your guide in physical form. That's kind of like twice born. Only this is a little more serious than that. The initiation's not done until you're an adult, you know, with your full faculties, and you know what you're up against. So twice born means a very, very high soul. Another way to say it is somebody who's initiated into a system of mysticism. Initiation is twice born status.
So, can I just recap really quickly? So, this person has done wrong. He's put down a Brahmin. He lives
No, he's this one has adultery with his guru's wife.
Right. So, he readers as a couple of animals, and then he's reincarnated straight away as
back into a Brahmin again.
Back into a Brahmin.
Correct.
He doesn't have to live any human lives.
No, not according to this. if the guru or teacher kills without reason his disciple who is just like a son to him, he has, in consequence of such a willful act on his part, to take birth as a beast of prey. That son who disregards his father and mother, O king, has to take birth after leaving off his human form as a jackass. You know, that's why I keep telling you. She wants to get a jackass here. And I said, no, you don't want a jackass. This is considered to be a low birth. I'm probably queuing up for that jackass form anyway, according to how my parents think I treated them. You're probably up there waiting just to see what happens to me when I... Assuming the asinine form, he must live in that form for 10 years. After that, he has to take birth as a crocodile, in which form he has to live for 1 year. After that, he regains his human form.
What a groovy animal, Stephen.
Yeah, dumb as dirt. That's great. Sharp teeth. That son whom his parents become angry with has, in consequence, son or daughter. Has, in consequence of his evil thoughts toward them, to take birth as an ass. As an ass, he must live for 10 months. He has then to take birth as a dog and to remain as such for 14 months. And after that, he has to take birth as a cat, and living in that form for 7 months, he then regains the status of human being. There you go. It is very tricky business, according to this, to do these things. Now, please remember, in case you don't know this, any of these things can be neutralized, dissolved, released, and forgiven. Any or all can be removed by prayer, piety, forgiveness, sincerity, remorse, mantra, yoga, meditation. All of that works to undo this stuff, so not to worry in case you have a big, deep, dark secret about how you once mistreated a beetle when you were a small child. We used to burn grasshoppers. Yeah, we'd get clothes pegs and put paper around them and set them on fire. Burn them at the stake. Well, grasshoppers would eat the crops, you see, so they were the bad guy. And I didn't know any better. My mom said, yeah, kill those grasshoppers. Okay, Mom. Give me the lighter. I was a hitman for the Canadian farmer. It's a good book title, huh? Okay, so
this is well that we all forget.
Isn't it now? Isn't it well that we all forget?
It's like when you're a dog, you forget this. Oh, I was once a human.
Well, you see, all animals are in tamogun, tamas, mode of ignorance. Mm-hmm. They're real stupid. They don't know from anything, really. They can't sit down and figure anything out. They just can't. They act instinctively, only according to instinct. And they don't really have any... Well, I mean, they have discretion. For example, an animal won't cross the street if there's a truck coming. I mean, there's that much discretion, naturally. But then again, some of them will. Correct? Some of them do, you know. But animals are all in the mode of ignorance. It's not a good place to be. Kalindi once projected her mind into Doug the dog's body, just to see what was going on in there, in Doug's mind, you know. And she said, there's really nothing going on here. What was going on? Nothing. It was pretty boring, you know. Okay. That man who misappropriates that which is deposited with him in trust must undergo 100 transformations. Charlie Haughey.
Absolutely. He is the horse now.
Because apparently there was somebody who had a trust set up for him because he was in hospital. And he was, you know, he couldn't look after himself. And the family had put the trust in Charlie Haughey's care. And he spent it. He spent that guy's trust. He has to undergo 100 transformations. He at last takes birth as a vile worm. In that order, he has to live for a period of 15 years. Upon the exhaustion of this great demerit in this way, he succeeds in regaining his status of humanity. But he already went through 100 transformations. If there's remorse, genuine remorse, and you see the error of your ways, and in your heart you're asking for forgiveness, you've made your peace with God, then this doesn't necessarily take place. It's for those who have no remorse and say, I got away with it.
But sometimes any remorse comes to someone like Charlie Haughey because he sees his days are numbered and he has the fear.
Yeah, but you see that also, that's still legitimate.
Is it?
If it's genuine. God is merciful. Yeah, God is more merciful than he is, you know, punishing. Anyway, the fact is God doesn't even get involved with that. He has other people to do that for him. That's what we're talking about, Yama. Okay. Having committed an act of adultery with the spouse of another, one has to take birth as a wolf. Do we not use this term? That guy's a wolf. Do you not, maybe in this part of the world? Where I come from, yeah, the wolf is, he's a wolf. He's preying upon women. Yeah, where I came from, that's what they would actually say.
You say wolf in your food, don't
you? Yeah, you say that too, yeah. After the wolf birth, he has to assume the forms of a dog, then a jackal, and then a vulture. Then he has to take the next birth as a snake, and then as a kanka, which is some kind of bird, a bird of prey, and then as a crane. That man who has sexual congress with his sister-in-law, or that woman who has sexual congress with her brother-in-law, has to take birth as a bird, kokila. Kokila is a cuckoo bird. And live in that form for a whole year. A person who, through lust, has sexual congress with the wife of his friend, or of his guru, or the wife of the king, has, after death, to take the form of a hog. He has to live in his porcine form for 5 years, and then to assume that of a wolf for 10 years. For the next 5 years, he has to assume that of a wolf, assume a birth of a wolf. Oh no, that's the same line twice, sorry. For the next 5 years, he has to live as a cat, and then for the next 10 years, as a cock. That's also, a cockerel. Rooster. That's also considered a very low birth when you read all these births in here. Anyway. So. That's what it's like.
Interesting.
You got the general gist of it, yeah? So, can you go up and down the species? Yes, you can. You can. And to get a human birth is a very, very difficult thing to do. Not easy to do at all. It takes tremendous time, energy, and effort to be raised up to a human birth. So one must be careful how to use it. Human birth is the most beneficial birth that you can have, because with human birth you can get off the wheel of samsara, repeated birth and death. If you do negative karma, like we were discussing mainly here a moment ago, then you will end up in these various kinds of species.
But if you don't show remorse anyway.
Yeah. If you do good work, positive karma, then you will end up in up in the higher realms, heavenly planets. Heavenly planets is not the spiritual world. It's considered to be the higher material realms. And when you go there, you absolutely enjoy yourself for thousands of years, and every desire you could possibly have will be fulfilled.
Like the Kepler Academy.
Yeah, everything you want. And you probably, you know, according to the Muslims, you probably do get 72 virgins. That's probably what's happening, at least in their heaven, you know. But it's like having money in the bank, and you spend it, then it's exhausted. There isn't any, and then you go back down again. That's how it works. It's just once the credits are used up, and you come back down. So you can go like this, up and down here in the material world, and essentially go nowhere. And sooner or later, you're greeted by death. Birth, death, old age, disease, suffering. That's what's on offer. Until you say, you know, I'm really, really tired of this, and I want to get off this wheel of repeated birth and death. And that's really what the human life is for. Because you can get out of all this. It's a great opportunity. It's even a better opportunity during the Iron Age. Right now. Because in the Golden Age, where people lived for 100,000 years, that was a lifespan, in order to release yourself from samsara, repeated birth and death, you'd have to sit in meditation for hundreds of years. So it was tremendous penance and difficulty to endure. In the Silver Age, the lifespan was 10,000 years, and at that time, you'd have to do these elaborate sacrifices and collect all this paraphernalia and spend all this money to do these very sophisticated and elaborate sacrifices, offerings into the sacred fire and mantras and prayers and all this kind of stuff that would go on for days. And that's the way it was done for liberation. Then in the Bronze Age, where people lived for around 1,000 years, then you had to do worship in the temple worship, which of course still exists today. And you'd have to do a lot of that, and take care of the deity or the statues of God in the temple, and do service. And now, in the Iron Age, where the lifespan is 100 years, and spiritual practice, spiritual life, spiritual consciousness is next to impossible, because you know, all the billboards are selling sex and, you know, alcohol and let's party and McDonald's hamburgers. So this is the onslaught that we experience nowadays. So the last thing people are thinking about is spiritual life. You know, why would you be interested in that? And fewer people go to church. Fewer and fewer people are interested in such things. So all you have to do at this time in the Iron Age is chanting. It's chanting mantras, chanting the names of God. You know, if you're a Catholic, you pray the rosary. If you're a Muslim, they pray their little beads. Allahu Akbar. You know, if you're into yoga, then you use yogic mantras, names of God, Krishna, Rama. There's so many names. Lots of them, Vishnu. So whatever you like, you can chant, but it's so much easier now. It's way easier. So, you know, it's sort of like a curse and a blessing all at the same time. It's not good news that you're here on Earth during the Iron Age and everything is going to hell in a handbasket. But it is good news because if you've got even this much consciousness, you can become liberated or free yourself from this, from repeated birth and death, so much more quickly, so much easier, because no one's interested in it. Yeah. So it's a great blessing from that point of view. And golden age again. Because there's a rise in consciousness right now, it's like a planetary period, right? So say, let's say that the Iron Age is like a Rahu period. Then we're going now into a time where we have been in a time where there's a rise in consciousness and awareness and a resurgence of spirituality. So that is like a minor Jupiter period or a minor golden age. Major Iron Age, minor golden age. So which one is operating? Both. Read the front page of the newspaper. You'll see the Iron Age is up and running.
It's winter time, but you're having a sunny day.
Correct. It's a sunny day in the middle of winter. So the consciousness is still is being raised up. But look at all we just read what's been happening for the last month. I mean, these are some serious negative events. Major negative events. Yeah, I read that article. Yeah. So,
Does it do that to you know the way they say with the amount of people that die, same amount of people are born? There was always balance on Earth. So did they do that?
There's way more people now, I think, than there had been in a long time. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Are they replacing souls?
Well, you know, Brahman, which is spirit, the Catholics call Brahman the Holy Ghost, the Holy Spirit. And Brahman is sort of like the spiritual energetic matrix inside of everything. It's everywhere, right here, everywhere. And without it, you know, we wouldn't exist. So it's like the matrix. This is the material matrix that is being supported by the spiritual matrix. The spiritual matrix is invisible, but without it, this material matrix couldn't float on top of it. Right? So it's explained that with the that spirit or Brahman, that energy, there, it's all composed of nothing but little souls. The whole thing is wall to wall little souls. Like you would see a sunbeam coming through the window on a sunny afternoon, and inside the sunbeam, how many little specks are floating? Yeah, you couldn't count them. It's like grains of sand on the beach. So it's like that. There's no counting. Okay, we're going to kill off 22,000 with the next 22,000 come in. It is not quite like that. That's not how it works. It's just inconceivable the level at which it operates. It's like wall to wall souls. This one is just energy. This one's taking a form. This one's leaving a form. This one's choosing a form. This one doesn't like his form. This form's fighting with another form. That's really what it's like.
Yeah. Does the Mahabharata say why the universe came, or how and why it came into existence?
Yeah.
Is it full of pain and suffering and getting off?
Yeah, we've talked about this many times, but you weren't here, so yeah. I'll tell you. In the spiritual world, God is king. God's in charge. So, if you are willing to recognize God's supremacy, you can live there. Not a problem. It's like, here in the material world, you have a family and a household, and then the teenage son or daughter says one day, "I don't want to follow your rules anymore." Your rules. I'll do what I damn well want to do. Okay. No problem. Pack your bag. There's the door. You can do whatever you want to do, but not here. In my house. In my house. Our house. Our rules. Correct? Does this happen? Sure it does. So, God says the same thing. Look, you can do what you want to do. I don't want to cramp your style. But you can't do it here. If you don't want to serve me, if you don't want to accept me and my position and how things work here, that's fine. Let me sort out a place for you. That's this.
But I thought that we all are gods. We're all the same energy. I didn't realize that.
We are part and parcel of God. It's like being a drop of the ocean. Within the ocean. It has all the same properties, but you aren't the ocean.
No.
See, there's two conceptions of God according to yogic philosophy. Mm-hmm. And the one you're talking about is, I'm God, you're God, everything's God, we're all the same. Mm-hmm. This is a different conception. This conception says that there's God. And then there's the living entities. Because in the Bhagavad Gita, God says there are three potencies. There's the God energy. And then there's the material world. And material, this is matter. Inert matter. Non-conscious matter. And then in between the two are the jivas. Called the marginal energy. On the edge. They have the same conscious properties as divine energy. But they become covered over by matter or maya and lose consciousness of their true identity. So if you're God, why are you illusioned? Would be the question. Why are you caught in this web? God wouldn't be caught in the web. God wouldn't be subject to birth, death, old age, and disease. Or you'd be able to free yourself, or you'd know the answers to all these questions, if you are God. So it's part and parcel of God, but never on the level of God, according to. This is called Dvaitist philosophy. There's Advaita and Dvaita. Dvaita means God and the entities. Advaita means everything's God, we're all God, everything's the same. So this is Dvaita. That's the difference. See, if you are a soul in your pristine state, you would be Sat, Chit, and Ananda. You are that, but it's covered over by matter, by material consciousness, by your body. So you're supposed to be Sat, eternal. If you're eternal, why do you die? Why do you sign on to death? Why do you sign on for a body that will die? Why would God do that? Chit means fully conscious, fully aware, not confused. Never confused. We're all confused most of the time, half the time. Ananda is bliss. Your birthright always is, or your non-birthright, is happiness, joy. So if you're not walking around joyful all the time, you're selling yourself short. That's divine state of being. Anyway, those are the two philosophical systems.
I think one builds on the other.
Well,
you have to recognize that you're a portion of God.
Another way to
some parts there, and then you have to understand the difference between God, and.
Yeah, or we could say it differently. There's three stages of God realization. There's energy, diversity, and personality. Vedanti tattva viras tattvam yajjnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabdite. There are three stages of realizing God. The first stage is Brahman, or energy, what you would call the Holy Ghost. That the divine energy permeates everything. And when you realize that that energy is everywhere, then a lot of times people relate to nature. Very easily they relate to nature, are inspired by nature, because they feel the divine energy in nature very easily. So this is material nature, not spiritual nature, but it's, again, it's existing on spiritual nature. So you realize that the energy of God is everywhere. It's all pervasive, omnipresent. So I'm God, you're God, this is God, that's God, everything's God. That's the first level of God realization. It's legitimate. The second level of God realization after energy is diversity, where you see God in everything and in everybody. It's you can perceive energy on the one hand, then you meet some jerk on the street or somebody who cuts you off in the freeway. Well, he's God too. He has God in his heart. How do you respond to him? You know, well, wait a second, you forgot that he was God. That here he has the God identity within him. So to be able to genuinely see the divine spark in everyone. When, you know, in India, they do this a lot. Why do they do this? Just like in Japan? No, this is bowing down to the soul, the divine spark in that. Or they get down on their hands and knees, and you touch your head to the ground in front of a person. Here, we are appalled by this idea. It's very common in India. Why would you not prostrate yourself in front of God? It's no big deal. So that's recognizing the divine in everyone, in everything. Also in the jackass is the divine spark. Although I wouldn't prostrate myself. So that's God in diversity. And then the highest stage of God realization is personality, face to face. The most compelling thing is relationships. We all want relationships. We're all looking for different kinds of relationships. The loving relationship, parental relationship, relationship with children, relationship with animals, relationship with friends. We want to go watch a movie because there's We can have a relationship with actors, even though we don't even meet them. Oh, I like this actor. Let me watch this movie. I love this actor. You know, there's all kind. Or I love this musician. I'm going to go to the concert when this band comes. I love these guys. And off we go. You know, Dervla goes to all of them. She never misses any. So, you know, we love that. That's all relationships. Very personal and interactive. Even in a big concert hall, you know, the band's not coming down and saying hello to you, but you're part of it all. You're part of the excitement and you're part of the crowd, and there's an exchange taking place there. It's fun. It's exciting. Everybody likes it. The audience, the band, everybody. It's personal. We want relationships. We want exchange. We want reciprocation. If you go into somebody's house, the first thing you'll feel is the energy. Suppose you go into the house of a famous person that you like. Who do you like?
Leonard Cohen.
Do you like Leonard Cohen?
Yeah.
Okay, suppose you go to Leonard Cohen's house. First thing you'll feel is Leonard Cohen's energy. It's his house. Just that. Now you're on the energetic level. Now, if you walk through the house and you examine everything, the walls, the things on the shelves, and etc., the way it's decorated, now you're in diversity. And maybe there's some people who work there for him. Now you're at a higher stage because you're seeing personal things. That's more exciting. Then, in through the door, maybe his music's playing in the background. I don't know. And in through the, is he a poet or a musician?
Both.
And then in through the door walks Leonard Cohen. The man himself. And he meets you. Which do you prefer? Oh. Correct. Why? Why can't you just be happy with his energy and sitting in his house? Same reason. Why settle for the energy, God is energy, when you can meet God, the personality? And you can have a relationship and a reciprocation. It's far more attractive. It's far more appealing. But if you don't want to do that, you don't have to. You can merge into the energy and lose your identity. On the energetic level, you lose your identity. That's what we're going to do this evening. Clindy's going to lead meditation, and we're going to lose our identity promptly in the next 5 minutes.
Well, my initial question, and I am getting all of it, all of what you're saying, but my initial question was more related to when one is reincarnated.
Yeah.
Are you, you know, if you're a part of the ocean, and you're all making up the same ocean, where is God in that ocean?
God is the ocean. You're the drop.
Exactly.
Yeah. You are part and parcel of God. Yeah. You are. You are.
But it doesn't, if you're just one of those drops, it doesn't decrease him in any way if you're taken away from the equation.
Yeah.
You can still function as the ocean without the drop in.
But if you are the ocean.
But you're not the ocean.
Not you. If you are a part of the ocean.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's what it is. Why would you suddenly deny that in any way and go and?
Well, that's the question. Don't know that. Don't know the answer to that.
Because that would seem like that's something that you would be.
Well, that's ego.
Human form.
Yeah, that's
but
ego.
But if you are a part of this ocean.
I don't know. There are those also that say that God expands himself to all these forms to know himself better.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another way to look at it. Tonight with the meditation. All right. So any other questions or any anybody want to share anything? Spiritually, I guess we should probably mention that we got the green light on a radio show. So we're going to begin very soon the Drew Lawrence show. In Hawaii, and I won't even be there under a palm tree. So no, it's going to be in Hawaii.
So
can we
tune into it somehow?
You'd be able to tune into it after the show when it's posted on the website. Then you'll be able to tune into it. You know, a streaming thing onto the website.
No,
it's at 5 p.m. Saturday afternoon in Honolulu, which is 4 a.m. Sunday morning.
Oh, no, so you're 4 a.m.
Mm-hmm. 4 to 5 Sunday morning. You'll know where to find me.
Phone comes up then.
Yeah, so this is a great opportunity.
Yeah,
it works. We're excited about it. And if with any luck, you know, it might get syndicated.
Maybe East Coast would do something.
They have a listening base of 10,000 people.
Fantastic.
Wow. So think about Hawaii, they're all...
That doesn't mean they'll all tune in.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
But maybe they find an energetic place.
Hawaii is like the heavenly planets.
I'm moving.
And it's very beautiful, and there are a lot of really, really spiritual and conscious people there. I mean, I never would have thought in a million years that when this opportunity would come, because I always thought it would come, that it would actually be in Hawaii. But I think it's a great blessing that's come, because I think, you know, if I was doing, say, the middle of the U.S., like Ohio, they'd go like, what the hell is this guy talking about? Whereas Hawaii, they would have a state of mind and an openness of heart. There's a lot of vegetarians there. There's a lot of people who practice spirituality there. There's a lot of really tuned in people there. So it's really, it's a good place too.
Would your radio show be like this, kind of, you know, chatting like this?
Yeah, it's going to be more or less what I do, like I do it here, but with, and I will talk about spiritual subjects, but probably not quite as directly as I do here.
Yeah.
You know, I'll be a little bit more vague,
yeah,
and a little bit more general than I would be here.
Would people ring in?
Yeah, I'm going to have a guest as far as possible on each show, and I'll do an interview. I'll be the interviewer. All right, so enough about me, more about you.
Meditation we're meant to do tonight is a bit like something we've done before, which is what I learned when I was 6. And we're just going to pick one seed mantra, like a short bija mantra, like Om or Shring or Kring or Ching. I think we'll just go with Shring. And what we'll do for the first 3 minutes or so is just breathing. You can just do your own, you know, breathing better than I do. But normally what I would do would be, I would use my palm and my finger on my nose, and blocking one at a time, you would breathe out for the count of a long 10, and then breathe back in the same nostril for a long 10. But when you're breathing in, not to do what they normally teach you, that you fill up your lungs and the rest of your body, you're filling your head. So if you can imagine that the air is going in and up into your brain.
to the point where you've got almost like a small pressure up here. So you'd do your out for 10, and then in for 10, and then you change over, and then out for 10, and in for 10.
Well, how does it get locked?
Try, if you can breathe through one of them, then the best thing is to just do really, really, really slow, deep breaths in and out. But to try and do this at least to start off, and it's too difficult then, just normal breathing. But the whole idea is to try and get the breath to come up to here.
Is it a vision or anything?
No vision.
Just that.
And you'll notice that when it's starting to work, you'll get more lightheaded and almost dizzy. And then this might happen. You might get almost like a slit of a doorway. And once you've gone in through that, it doesn't have to look like a door. It'll just be a feeling of just going into this little...
Okay.
Yeah. And you're in it then. And when you're fully in it, and this is a bit of a crude way of saying it, but it's like you're having an orgasm for 20 minutes.
Oh my God.
I've had people feel it for that long.
And during the 10
No, the first 3 minutes. No, the first 3 minutes is just that. The first 3 minutes is just the breathing, because if you don't do the breathing, you can't get into that.
We call you.
Real long.
Okay.
You see how these women want to prolong the orgasm?
I'm with you.
Once you've finished the breathing part, you'll say the shrink over and over and over again in your head, and that will heighten that'll keep the feeling going by saying it. But if you say it like normal, shrink, 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 you might lose it. So quite often you might have to say it faster. And once you're saying it fast enough, you'll feel you're in it. Keep it going. It's like the hamster wheel.
So you say it faster.
You say it
faster. Shring, 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 shring.
Shring, 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 yeah.
So will you give us a kind of 3 minute thing, like, okay, go into normal?
I'll knock on this.
Okay.
When it's time to go into the three. When you eat the first 3 minutes,
yeah.
Then I'll knock.
Okay.
And then you just go into the. Forget about everything and just say the shring.
So you've been doing this since you were little. He's all right doing this, yeah?
Oh, yeah, he's fine, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the first 3 minutes is just the breathing?
Just the breathing until you get into the zone. You'll feel it. All the time. So it's the out for 10 and then the in for 10 and then you change over. And then out for 10, and in for 10, change over.